Welcome to the show, where truth takes the mic, where the world spins fast, but we hold it tight. This is the Howie Silbiger Show on Truth Talk Radio, where the real ones go.
Welcome to the program. My name is Howie Silbiger, and it has been a few days since I've been on. I was on with Political Hitman just a couple of days ago, and I did a very quick show, and I wanted to expand a little bit on what we were talking about there. It was on September 10th, the day that Charlie Kirk was assassinated, was killed during a presentation at a university. He was shot dead. By now, everybody's heard the story. Everybody's seen the video. There's no reason to replay it, nor do I want to replay it. It was pretty gruesome, pretty disgusting. And so we'll just let that go. And I expressed a little bit of my opinion then, and I'd like to express a little more now. I've had a few days to think about it and really get my thoughts together. For some reason, and I didn't know why then, but I'm a little more sure about it now, I was affected, greatly affected by the murder of Charlie Kirk. I didn't particularly agree with everything he said. He is evangelical Christian, which means that that he automatically supports Israel, because in the book of Revelations it says that the ingathering of Jews into Israel will speed up the coming of Messiah. So evangelical Christians, the recoming of Jesus, not the coming of Messiah, the recoming of Jesus, the second coming. And therefore, evangelical Christians are always in support of Israel. And so understanding that, I understood that his love for Israel and his love for the Jewish people was mired in this idea that anyone who doesn't accept Jesus at the end of the line will be condemned to hell. So I get his support for Israel. And if he did make some anti-Jewish remarks over the course of the years that he was active, that's possible too. Because that's the way religion works. Sometimes one religion disparages another, and sometimes one belief overlaps another or is counter to another. That doesn't really bother me all that much either. I don't really care much about what Charlie Kirk spoke about or what he believed. I know I didn't agree with a lot of it. But what I do care about is that he had the right to express his opinion. He had the right to go to university campuses and speak to students. He had the right to live. There are many of us who go out and speak in public a lot. I'm on here a lot, and I've been a public figure for a very long time. And every time we see a public figure get killed because he expressed an opinion, or get killed because they appeared in public and some lunatic didn't like them, It instills a certain fear into people who speak in public, people who express an opinion. Because you never know when you're going to trigger some lunatic and he's going to grab a gun and try to go after you or your family. You never know. And this is really what concerns me and what concerns many of the political pundits out there who express an opinion on a regular basis. Now, We could lower the temperature, and on this show, I allow anybody who wants to come onto the show. I haven't had many guests in the last little while, and it's not from lack of trying to get guests. It's lack of people who are opposed to my position wanting to come on and debate with me. So I invite people, and they turn me down, because we live in such a polarized world today that even people who disagree with you, where 10 years ago and 15 years ago and 20 years ago, it was never a problem to have a debate on the show. It was never a problem to get somebody who disagreed with me to join me on on the show so we could talk about it. And we could agree to disagree at the end. That's fine. But at least we could have a normal discussion. That doesn't happen anymore. Unfortunately, people who disagree with me refuse to come onto the show. And so no matter how many invites I send out, no matter how many times I call people, no matter how many times I text people or email people and ask them, hey, come and guest on the show, they turn me down. And they turn me down because, for various reasons. And it's always some excuse, I have no time, blah, blah, blah. They always have an excuse. But the end result is that they don't want to hear my point of view. That I'm open to hear their point of view, but they're not open to hear my point of view. And that kind of closed-mindedness is what leads people to pick up a gun and shoot people. Because if you don't understand both sides of the issue, if you don't understand both sides of the story, you can't really debate it. And if you live in a vacuum, or you live in a bubble, an echo chamber where all you hear is the same opinion over and over and over again, for instance, people who only listen to CNN and won't turn on Fox News or won't turn on another network, but they only listen to one network. When you live in that kind of bubble, what happens is you become obsessed with that point of view. And becoming obsessed with that point of view means that anybody who has a point of view outside of that point of view, you don't consider either legitimate, you don't consider viewpoint legitimate, you don't consider person legitimate. And then when you start dehumanizing people who have that point of view, which the networks do, then suddenly they become subhuman. And when people become subhuman, they become expendable. And when people become expendable, then it's easy to pick up a gun and shoot them because they're not really human. They're monsters. They're Nazis. They're neo-Nazis. They're KKK members. They're white supremacists. They're subhuman. They deserve to die. And that's what happens over and over and over again when it comes to people expressing their opinion being assassinated, is that at one point or another, these people were dehumanized and then they were killed. And we see that happening in politics. We see it happening with politicians. We see it happening with the Jewish people who are now being dehumanized, and the Israelis who are being dehumanized in the media and dehumanized by different activist groups. I'll call them activists. I'll be polite. And we see it happening over and over again, and it's scary. It's scary because we live in such a polarized world where people are living in a bubble and don't realize there's a world that's happening around them. There's a world outside of their bubble. And there are people who have different opinions. Now, I've been saying this a long time on the show, and it's been the truth for a very, very long time, that the left, more than the right, has had this opinion that my opinion is correct, and if you disagree with me, you're a Nazi. You're a white supremacist. You're evil. You're a monster. They use these words with impunity. They use these words as if they have no meaning. But when you call someone a Nazi, I don't think there's a worse insult that you could do to somebody than call them a Nazi. Nazis were the most depraved, inhumane people ever to live. The stuff they did to the Jews, to the gypsies, to the blacks, the medical experiments, the torture, the murder, the sheer inhumanity they showed towards those people put them into the single most category of the most inhumane people to ever have lived. The fact that they built killing factories and they logged how many people they killed as a factory logs how many widgets they produce. Calling someone a Nazi is the worst thing you could say about somebody. I can't think of a worse or more horrible insult. Yet it's thrown around, and being Hitler and being a Nazi is thrown around as if it means nothing. In fact, it's used so much, it's been diluted. I said the same thing about the word anti-Semitism. For years, the Jewish community was calling everything an anti-Semite, everybody an anti-Semite, calling everything anti-Semitism. They diluted the word. So we started using anti-Jewite on this show because I really wanted to drive home the point that no, this is anti-Jews. They're against Jews. I want to drive home that point. So I changed the word. Now, I didn't have to change the word. Everyone knows what an anti-Semite is. Everyone knows what it means, but it doesn't have the same impact. So if I say you are a Jew hater, it has a lot bigger impact than if I say you're an anti-Semite because the word's been used so much. And the same thing has happened to Hitler and Nazi and white supremacist and KKK and a whole lot of other words that the left has used to describe right-wing people. There are no Nazis in government in North America today. No matter how many times you want to say Donald Trump's a Nazi, he's not a Nazi. And none of the policies he's passed have been even a shade of what Nazism was. And nothing happening in the United States is even close to what Nazism is. Calling what's happening in Gaza genocide is also misusing the word genocide. It's not a genocide. And calling it a famine is misusing the word famine. So the misuse of language and the perpetration of these myths and these falsehoods on social media has really changed the way the world views the world. Simple as that. People are very convinced that if they read it on social media, it's true. And many times it's not. And many times the articles that I read on social media are either AI generated, and I've seen that from major news sources, or they're misquoting, or they have some kind of political agenda behind them. Now, I don't pretend to be a news show here. It's called the Howie Silberger Show. It's not called the Howie Silberger News Hour. I don't pretend to be a news show. I pretend to be an opinion show. That's right. I said I pretend to be an opinion show. Because in reality, I'm just expressing my opinion. I don't represent anybody aside from myself. And so when I say I pretend to be an opinion show, it's because if I said I was a full opinion show, then I would be broadcasting the opinions of everyone. I pretend to be an opinion show because I broadcast the opinions of myself. And so this is the Howie Silberger Show. It's about me and my opinion. Now, when I bring on a guest, fine, another opinion will be expressed on the show. But in reality, it's basically about my opinion. Now, you could agree with me or disagree with me. You could call in and you could argue with me if you feel that that's what you want to do. But at the end of the day, it's just my opinion, and I don't hold very much clout, and I don't hold very much power. So killing me probably would not solve anything. It would just stop this show. That's pretty much all it would do, and it would put my family into mourning. Same thing with Charlie Kirk. He spoke on campuses. He was a little influential among the young people. He had a very popular podcast. But at the end of the day, he was just expressing an opinion. Now, you have the right to agree or disagree with that opinion. That is your right. That is solely your right. You could turn him off. You don't have to listen to him. You don't have to go to his events. And you didn't have to hear anything he had to say about anything. You have that right. You have that option. But silencing him, killing him, taking a father away from his children, a husband away from his wife, is wrong in every sense of the way. There is no excuse for killing somebody for expressing an opinion. And I can't be more equivocally clear about this. There is no excuse, regardless if you agree with them or disagree with them, if you like them or dislike them, if you like what they say or dislike what they say, there is no excuse for killing somebody for expressing their opinion. Alan Dershowitz, years and years ago, decided that he was going to defend the neo-Nazi group that wanted to march in Skokie, Illinois, which is a very Jewish neighborhood. They were banned from marching by the Skokie City Council, and Alan Dershowitz decided that he was going to represent them. And the quote that he used at the time was, "I may hate everything they say, but I will die, and I will die on the stake to allow them to say it." Because he believed in freedom of speech. He believed in the right for people to express their opinion without being barred or banned from speaking. And I believe in that right too. And I've always have. And so I have always invited people who oppose my position, people who have opposite positions of mine, to be on the show. If you go back 20, 25 years ago, and you continue listening to the archives of the show, you will see that almost every episode, I always had somebody who disagreed with me on the show arguing with me. That wasn't to fill time. That wasn't to make it more interesting because I was debating someone. That was to solely send a message that this is an open forum. I always have open lines. You see the number right there on the bottom of the screen. I always have an open line on the show. And the open line is there intentionally so that anybody could call in and we could have a discussion. Now, this show today is pre-recorded, so don't call in. But normally when I do the show live, you could feel free to call in and we could have a discussion. And I love to talk to people. I love to discuss my opinion, and I'd love to hear their opinions. Because the only way I could grow as a commentator, the only way I could understand the entire scope of the debate is to hear both sides. And sometimes, just sometimes, doesn't happen often, but sometimes the other side will convince me that I was wrong, that my opinion was wrong, or I had the wrong information. And then I will change my opinion, because that is what debate is supposed to do. It's supposed to educate the other side on your opinion, and perhaps, in a rare case, perhaps sway that person to agree with you. That's humanity. That's discussions. That's conversation. And that's something that has been sorely lost with the advent of social media. Texting, Snapchatting, Instagramming has replaced conversation and has isolated people, particularly the young, has isolated people to a point where they don't know how to have a discussion anymore. And the pundits that are screaming and yelling, and the TikTokers that are constantly barraging them with left-wing political rhetoric, has caused a situation where people who don't know how to speak to each other, people who don't know how to communicate, people who text each other when they're sitting across the table from each other, are now faced with opinions that they don't agree with, and they don't know how to handle it. Let's take it one step further, because I think it's important to actually investigate this and go even one step further. We live in a culture, and this has been a culture, the culture has changed in the last 30 years, but 15, 20 years ago, the culture started changing, where people weren't allowed to lose. So we started giving away participation medals for everybody who participated in an event. There was no first place, second place, third place. Everybody was a winner. There were soccer games that were played, kids' soccer games that were played that didn't keep score because the losing team might be upset that they lost. The whole concept of the agony of defeat and the joy of winning disappeared. And by that disappearing, by people having the kind of empathy that, oh, I don't want my kid to be upset, so therefore he can never lose at anything. That kind of empathy, while I understand where the concept came from and I understand why the concept arrived and why the concept was perpetrated, it didn't do any service to the children. You can't appreciate a win unless you've lost. And then if you're always winning and everything is always handed to you and you always get a medal and always get a pat on the back and always get a congratulations, even if you lost 75-1, then what happens when you get to the real world and nobody's padding the score for you? What happens when you get to the real world and you don't get a job? What happens to get to the real world and somebody expresses an opinion you don't like? How do you react to that? You don't have the skills to react to that because you've never lost anything in your life. So the job that you lose, and you have no idea what it means to lose something, and suddenly you lost a job, there is no skills. You don't have the stuff inside you in order to process that. And so two things happen. You go crazy and you pull out a gun and you shoot up your old business. Or you go into deep depression and you pay a psychiatrist for the rest of your life to try to help you get out of it. This is purely a result of parents not allowing their kids to understand the agony of defeat. So you factor that in, factor in Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat, where the goal is to get as many likes as possible and many followers as possible. We see on Instagram, you see on TikTok, so many people, so many young people, so many kids trying to get 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 followers. And they're doing backflips and forward flips and telling jokes and doing all sorts of crazy stuff, just trying to get attention. And you wonder, if they're trying to get attention like that, how much attention are they lacking in their real lives? And what happens when that attention goes away? So sure, you're 12 years old, you're a diver, and you're diving off diving boards, and you get 1 million followers, and wow, you're on top of the world. 1 million people are watching you dive off your diving board. And suddenly your account gets shut down. What happens then? Suddenly you don't have the crowds cheering at you. You don't have the people adoring you. You're not so cute anymore. You're not 12 anymore. Now you're 40. What happens then? Unfortunately, The truth is, drugs and alcohol. That's what happens then. Like any child star that was on a television show. And you see their downfall, you see the spiral. It's not healthy. It's not healthy for society, it's not healthy for anybody. And it's definitely not healthy for the people who try to express an opinion, try to start a conversation, try to have a conversation. Because it puts us in danger. And it puts us in danger for no reason. It puts us in danger because we don't know, I really don't know who's watching this video right now. I really don't know how somebody's going to react to anything I say. I talk about Israel a lot. I talk about the so-called Palestinians a lot. I talk about anti-Judaism a lot. Who knows who's listening and who knows how they're going to react? So the question is, why do I keep doing this? This is the big question that runs through my head and runs through a lot of my family members and a lot of my friends' heads. And they ask me this all the time. Why do you keep doing this? If you're putting your life on the line every time you turn on that camera, if you are saying right now that there are nutcases out there that are willing to kill, I'm not saying it, it's obvious, it happened this week. But if you are saying that there are nutcases out there that are willing to kill because you expressed an opinion, why would you keep expressing an opinion? I had to think about that answer. Why would I do this? Why would I continue to do this? What prompts me, what drives me to continue to do this if it's putting my life on the line? Then I thought back. And I remember when I was a kid, I must have been 10 years old, 9 or 10 years old. I was a big fan of talk radio. It's all I've ever wanted to do was talk radio. And since I'm 10 years old, I want to be a talk radio show host. And I succeeded. I achieved my dream of doing that many, many times over. But I remember one day, I always read the newspaper. I was always kept up with the news, even as a young kid. I was always interested in what was going on. One day, I remember picking up the newspaper and seeing a article about a radio talk show host in Denver, Colorado, named Alan Berg. And he was shot and killed in front of his house for expressing his opinion on radio. A bunch of Nazis, they were actually neo-Nazis, came out and shot him. Because they didn't like that he expressed that he was Jewish, and he didn't like a lot of stuff he expressed. I remember a few years after that, Oliver Stone put out a movie called Talk Radio, which basically chronicled the life of Alan Berg without naming him. They had a different name. But the idea was the same, that his point of view was disliked by somebody who went out and killed him. And I thought about it as a kid, and I said, that's not right. Even as a 10-year-old, I realized that that was wrong, that everybody should have a right to express themselves. Everybody should have a right to do what they want to do, to say what they want to say, and we should not limit speech. Of course, there's always limits to not limiting speech, meaning that if somebody's inciting a riot or inciting hatred against a group of people, that should never be allowed. But if somebody is just speaking their mind and expressing an opinion, even if that opinion is vile, they should be allowed to say it. And if I don't want to hear it, they should turn me off. Years ago, I worked for the West End Chronicle. At the time, it was called The Monitor. Now it's closed. And I wrote an article about Dr. Laura Schlesinger. So right before I'd written the article, Dr. Laura Schlesinger was in a little bit of a controversy where she was on her radio talk show. She was talking to a caller who called for some advice. And she mentioned that she thought biologically that being gay was a biological error, that people are supposed to be programmed to be male and female. And if it's a male and male or female and female, it was a biological error. This was her point of view. And of course, the activists went to town on that and got her TV show. She had a radio show and a TV show, got her TV show canceled. Okay, fine. I wrote an article saying that I may not agree with Dr. Laura and her biological error analogy. That might not be something I agree with. But she had every right to say it. She had every right to express her opinion. And if you didn't like what she had to say, you didn't have to rally to get rid of her show. You didn't have to silence her. You didn't have to censor her. All you have to do is turn her off. As if this show and every other show, if you don't click on the link, if you don't turn on the radio, if you don't look at the show, watch the show, the ratings go down. If the ratings go down to a certain level, the network that I'm on or the network anybody's on is not going to keep carrying you. If they don't get the listenership, they don't get the viewership, why would they keep airing the show? It would be counterproductive. It costs money to put on these shows. It'd be counterproductive. Therefore, all you have to do is turn her off. And I said that back then. And of course, when I wrote the article and the letters started coming in, hundreds and hundreds of letters started coming in, the newspaper fired me. Even the editor put up an editorial. He put up an editorial to defend me. He got fired too. So two of us got fired for expressing an opinion. So I understand what it is to be canceled. I get it. At the same time, I understand that we should have the right to express our opinions. And you don't have to read the article. You don't have to share it. You don't have to look at it. You don't have to watch me. You don't have to listen to me. You don't have to do any of this. Nobody's holding a gun to your head saying, do this. So why do I keep going? That's the question. Because I feel that I should have the right to express my opinion. I don't think I have to be afraid to express my opinion. I think being afraid to express my opinion is giving in to the radicals and the crazies. And I'm never going to do that. I've been an opinionated person for my entire life. I've been expressing my opinion on the radio and on the internet for my entire life, pretty much. My entire adult life, at least. And that's not going to change. I don't intend on stepping down. I don't intend on doing the show any less. I don't intend on changing the way I live my life. But when I see something like what happened to Charlie Kirk happen, it makes you think twice. It makes you wonder. And it makes you really sad. Really sad because we are living in a world which believes that this was correct. I saw the jubilation on X. I saw people cheering. I saw people trying to hide the fact that they were cheering the death of a man by trying to couch it in some other rhetoric, which was all BS. The end of the day is that they were cheering his death. And that made me really sad. It didn't make me angry. It made me sad. Sad that humanity has gone to a point where people could cheer the death of another man. Sad that humanity has gotten to a point where a very public murder, like the murder of Charlie Kirk, who unfortunately his video has aired everywhere, everyone's seen the poor man die. Unfortunately, that could lead to some crazies actually cheering. It's extremely sad. And that's where we are today. That's where we're at now. The sadness, the absolute revulsion of the fact that there are people out there cheering. And one has to wonder, if God forbid something like that should happen to somebody else, how much cheering will go on? And that's what makes people like me, who sit in studios like this one, and talk to you. That's what makes us wonder, is it really worth the effort? Is it really worth the risk? I think it is, but you're going to see a lot of people who express opinions that are contrary to the norm backing out of their podcasts. And that's a shame, because when the conversation stops, the violence begins. I'm Howie Silberger. Thank you for joining me. I will be on again later on in the week, right here on the True Talk Radio Network. Thanks again for joining me. I'll see you again later on in the week. And I hope you all stay safe. Be good people.